Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show. That's right. Today we're going to talk about the dark side. And as we do, it's kind of shocking that a very Christian soul like Michael McKibben, who is Mike in our show, of course, and is from Americans for Innovation. And of course, we, the Anonymous Patriots and myself, Thomas Paine and the Ass of the Globalists, are from Aim for Truth. And what we try to do is bring out the truth, but sometimes the truth, folks, is very dark. And today we're going to focus on the dark because the researchers that Michael McKibben works with have uncovered some of the most unseemly parts of the globalist imperialist plan to control the world. And we had hints of this before, but now the evidence is so profound that we have seen that W.T. Stead, the biographer of Cecil Rhodes, was truly working with the dark forces, one could call evil. You could call them demons, and I might even get into describing what that is, but let's look at just the facts, because we are all about facts. So, Mike, welcome to the show. What can you tell us about your new research that have shown the unseemly side of W.T. Stead?
Well, first of all, you came down into the mines with us, and then you kept going. And you didn't come back for 2 weeks. So it's great to talk to you again.
That's the nicest thing anybody said to me in a long time. Usually people don't like to talk to me because the truth hurts. It stings. It's a jab. But unfortunately, the truth must be told and somebody's got to do it. And we sure do appreciate you and your researchers because in looking into Oracle, the innocent little Oracle that Trump says, oh, Larry Ellison, he's got a great company. Well, you're going to tell us about whose company it really is, what it really is doing, and who that nutcase is and who his supposed stepfather or whatever you'd call him, adopted dad, and how that person followed W.T. Stead, which is at the core of exactly the perversions that are going on with Hunter Biden. Hunter yes. Biden, $4.5 billion. What does he get then? Unlimited prostitution, underage prostitution, opium, crack cocaine, more money, more power than anybody can shake a stick at. And why is it then that they fall into the evil pattern of weird sexual manipulation and just strange cult-like activities?
Right. Everybody. I mean, most of the time, average people, average moral people look at what these people are doing and just say they're crazy, right? I'm tempted to do that, but I don't anymore. Because what we're seeing is the center of the, I'm going to call it anti-spiritual world that drives these people. And it's very real. And it came out of us trying to figure out who Larry Ellison was. Because I grew up hearing the story that he started Oracle at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and that he came up with the name of Oracle, and then he was magically given the CIA contract in the late 70s, and then the NSA contract, and he just went from strength to strength and has never looked back and has never worked anywhere else his whole career. And so that's what I had heard, and that's what I believed until about 2 weeks ago. But then we started putting people on various aspects of his life to figure out whether what he was telling us about himself was true or not. And as we can now say, I can summarize saying everything that he told us was a lie. Absolutely everything. Everything the government told us about its relationship to Larry has been a lie. And that this is all centered in the development by the CIA after World War II of a universal data management system that was housed at Meade, Fort Meade, in outside of Baltimore. And this was the system that was the implementation of the Project Echelon, which Edward Snowden first told us about. And now we can see the documents from the CIA releases that occurred in 2016. And that this Oracle system that supposedly Ellison built was actually just a recast of software that IBM already had in IBM DB2, and they needed a new name for it. So actually, this morning, we had some people that were looking up the origins of the word oracle, and we could tell that it wasn't invented by Larry Ellison. And lo and behold, in a document that was redacted at the CIA archives, we discovered in chasing down the trail of one of the redactions that the actual contract that began the Project Oracle occurred in March of 1969, and it was a contract with Ampex, and it was called Project Oracle. In 1973, we discovered that the, I'm going to give you the actual name of Oracle. It's an acronym, and it's not about the Oracle of Delphi. It's an acronym for Optimum Records Automation for Courts and Law Enforcement. And it was a contract that Ampex Corporation, the tape recorder company that also did computer tapes, had with the Los Angeles County Supervisors. And that was the origin of the word Oracle. Now, here's the problem that they had. After they got going, they discovered that the contract was entered to based on bribery of at least three different LA County employees. So it was mired in scandal. And then in March of, in April of 1973, the Los Angeles County sued Ampex over the contract for non-delivery. They didn't deliver the contract. They didn't deliver the features. They didn't deliver any documentation for the system. And they didn't do any testing on the system, and yet they spent $8.1 million. This is Ampex. And then we now see from other CIA documents that 2 months later, the CIA entered an agreement with Oracle to provide what has become Oracle. So clearly what was going on is they were having to create a new story for the origins of Oracle. Since it had been mired in so much bribery and scandal, and then they were salvaging the project by moving it to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, making up the story about Larry Ellison supposedly coming up with the name, and then rebranding the project from the LA County as the new Oracle database. So that has just come out today. And we will go, I'm sure, a lot deeper than that. But that tells you, that kind of gives you an indication of how fraudulent this whole project is and how fake Oracle is as a corporation. It was created by the CIA to provide the database for Operation Echelon, which my former director was the general who signed off on it. But I digress.
That's not a digression. Michael Hayden, the head of the NSA, built Echelon. He threw out the old systems. That was kind of the end of the kind of things that I worked with at Fort Meade, Maryland, when I was in the NSA. And what he did was he basically created, as we watched DARPA create DARPANET, he created the dark database. And this dark database, William Binney talks about, and there, you know, and others that are whistleblowers, that it was meta. Analysis of metadata, yep. Right? And that then became the power and control tool. So when DARPA started, and it was DARPANET, before we had the miracle of the genius at CERN inventing the World Wide Web, we already had a dark web, and that dark web was used by the CIA and the FBI to cover their own trails. To cover their own tracks, to see if they could be caught for crimes. And that, to this very day, is a battle still going on between the CIA and the NSA. They fight over who is going to control this dark data, the dark web, the dark Google, and everything Google is dark, the dark Facebook. These are evil forces that are weapons that have been turned against us.
And well, so, can I interrupt you? Mm-hmm. Because you mentioned the NSA. So what we have in the facts, in the records that are provided by the CIA, we see now that the first version of Oracle was this LA County California crime and courts database, which then in 73 was prosecuted, and they ended up convicting three people for scandal and for bribery in the acquisition of that contract. 2 months later, the CIA starts a contract with Oracle, quote. They didn't talk about Ampex at that point. And then what we have seen in the records is that in 81, the NSA ordered an Oracle system running on an IBM database or on an IBM computer in 1981. So what we see is the origins are all CIA, and at some point then the NSA bought a copy. And what we now know from how these people work is they were just looking for a way to legitimize the NSA getting this same system, which clearly they already had, because we now know from the Operation Echelon and the records that show General Freeze that in 1979, he had cut a deal with the people to develop this and to deploy this system. So we can see that this isn't a bunch of different names. This is all the same people making up different agencies so that they've got deniability. One can buy the product from the other. They can build it all for themselves, and then they can buy it from each other. And they can go through this kabuki theater of rebranding IBM DB2 as Oracle in order to put an IBM Oracle / IBM 360 mainframe together to do this mass surveillance. So it's all kabuki theater. The reason we haven't known about it is most of this stuff was highly secret activities that for which the records are now just coming out. In fact, these came out in 2016. So we've got documents from 1969 just coming out in 2016. And oh, by the way, almost every name that's mentioned in there related to Ampex and Oracle in terms of their internal personnel is redacted. So they've got a lot of explaining to do.
Well, you've explained it so well when the research that you brought forward and the research we had done on Highlands Forum, because what we're talking about here is when the CIA wanted to buy Oracle, it was so that they could control the records of criminals, so they could use it for blackmail, so they could hide their own misdeeds, they wanted to find out whether there are any digital records out there. So they had to have complete control of it all. And that's why every Silicon Valley cyber lord, these cardboard cutouts from Peter Thiel to, the Mark of the Zucker Beast to Larry Ellison, it's all the same story. It's a fight between the CIA's InQtel, which is a major force on the Highlands Forum group, which is it. Let's remember, Highlands Forum is the seat of the weaponization tools of the Pilgrim Society. They're globalists, they're internationalists, transnationalists, they are anti-American. So we see this battle. So when the Oracle became the dark database, then of course the CIA and the InQtel is going to fight with the Department of Defense and DARPA to control it. And so, of course, Department of Defense has NSA on their side. So it's an NSA-CIA battle now in the realm of the digital virtual warfare, which we used to call, when I was there, electronic warfare. And, you know, this is literally about surveilling, targeting, attacking, and subverting and conquering anyone who gets in the way. So they have to have these things in place so that they can do their dirty work. And when you look closely, this is the worst form. Well, there's seven deadly sins, and the worst of them is hatred, of course. This is the home of hatred. This is the home that says, we are going to control you in the virtual digital world. We're going to take over your life. And we will let you go along as you are a good consumer and as long as you go along with the administrative policies. But after that, if you don't, then we will simply annihilate you. And they have 1,000 ways to do that. So every speck of data that has now been clustered into the U.S. Digital Service that was an Eric Schmidt gift of $1.5 billion to Obama, the federal government has, of course, now allowed that to go through Five Eyes to the Brits. And the Brits are really our enemy. and they are the source of the Pilgrim Society. W.T. Stead, who inspired Cecil Rhodes and inspired what the research that you've brought forward with the Empire Press Union, becoming really the intelligence agencies of the world using Tavistock control methods, brainwashing, social manipulation, all behavioral modification through these weapons. This is a concerted, clear effort of the demon of hatred to intervene to make sure that there's no peace on the earth so that the bankers can make money on both sides of every war. So this is what you're bringing forth. And I think you were a little bit surprised to find out how absurd and ridiculous the cult was that Larry Ellison was raised in.
Yeah, that whenever we find these biographies of these cardboard cutouts, usually they don't talk about their parents, and certainly not their grandparents. And Larry was no exception. The narrative is that he his mother had him out of wedlock, and then he was given up for adoption in 1945 to Lewis Ellison and his wife Alice Ann Ellison. And then there's this whole cutesy story about how he went to University of Illinois, and then in his sophomore year his adoptive mother died. That would be Alice Ann, and then he left school. That was his excuse for dropping out. That's a total lie. His mother had, that person, Alice Ann, had died 19 years earlier. And then he says in other biographies that he didn't know who his biological father was ever. And as far as we can tell, his biological father may in fact have been a disciple of W.T. Stead. And his name is Hugh Robert Sinclair Moore. And what we do know for a fact is that his adoptive mother was Hugh, I'm going to call him Moore, Moore's third polygamous wife. And there's no record of a divorce. And as it turns out, Hugh Moore was married five times. And he was also incarcerated in San Quentin in 1912 for 5 years for larceny, where he claimed to be a clairvoyant. He said he was the king of the clairvoyance in Oakland, California. And one of his specialties was doubling people's money. And apparently he was given a gold nugget once. He promised to double it. He didn't double it. He didn't give the gold nugget back. And that got him 5 years in San Quentin. He got out in 1918. And then get this, Douglas, within 12 months, he married three women. And one of those women was a 16-year-old, Ida Kleffler, whose father, after they had gotten married, found out about it, and then filed for an annulment, which was issued about a year later. And wouldn't you know it, that within 2 months of the annulment going through, there is an announcement that Hugh Moore died, and he died writing a sermon for his church. Now, his church, I'm not making this up, it's the Church of Psychoscience. And it was in Oakland, California, the Church of Psychoscience. And in a lot of the write-ups about him in Los Angeles and San Francisco, there are detailed descriptions of these seances he would have and these visitations from spirits and hypnotism and his power over women, especially young women. And these descriptions went on and on. And in one of the descriptions in the Los Angeles Herald, there was a description that said in the end that in his younger days, Hugh Moore was the secretary for W.T. Stead in England. And when we saw that, we go, oh my gosh, W.T. Stead is a notorious spiritualist. And we had not dug into that aspect of Stead's character, but now we see this direct connection between Larry Ellison and Hugh Moore and W.T. Stead. So we see this Pilgrim Society connection. So clearly the signal is out there. Dig into this, the background of W.T. Stead, and you will see the source of this bizarre spiritualism that is driving high tech today. And what we do know from the write-up of Professor Quigley from Columbia University, no, Georgetown, about the early days of the before the formation of the Pilgrim Society, when it was just the Round Table, that there's much description of the fact that even though Cecil Rhodes and Lord Rothschild and Lord Rosebery were driving the agenda from a power and influence aspect, it was W.T. Stead, according to Quigley, that was the real strategist of the Round Table that became the Pilgrim Society. So what it was clear that we needed to dig more into this spiritualism of W.T. Stead. Now, here's where I got off of my comfort zone, because I was reading about seances and hypnotism and spirit writing and spirit photography and clairvoyance and, you know, this whole area of people's existence that I tried to stay away from growing up. But I know that in reading about this, I was thinking of you, because you have a specialty in this area from your research and your experience. And while you were down in the mines, I kept wanting to call you, but you weren't available. So we just kept digging and reading. Now, one of the things that we read is that Stead was very open in the Victorian England, writing about his spiritualism in a quarterly called Borderland in 1893 to 1896. And then 2 months before the first Imperial Press Conference in 1909, he forms this organization called Julia's Bureau. And specifically, this organization was going to specialize in facilitating seances that would allow people to meet with their dead relatives and friends. And specifically, Stead said that he was guided in the creation of this organization that by a dead person that he met in 1890 in Chicago. And she was directing this organization, for which he was the physical representative, and he was also funding it. Now, this was 2 months before the 1909 press conference. So it's quite conceivable that Hugh Moore was assisting him in the meeting, that meeting of the Pilgrim Society, to organize not only the world newspapers, but also organizing the beginnings of MI5, MI6, GCHQ, and the Empire Press Union. All occurred in that 1 6-week period in 1909. And so with that and hearing and reading about how influential W.T. Stead was to the agenda of the Pilgrim Society, we started putting two and two together and seeing that Stead was some sort of medium or spiritual guide to the entire agenda of the reformation of the British Empire around this imperial corporatist model that we are now suffering from to this day. And so with this Hugh Moore related to Larry Ellison, we started looking at what he did after he obviously left England. And we find a raft of articles. He went to Oakland, California, and started this Church of Psychoscience. And this church existed for 20, 30 years. And we believe is the spiritual beginnings of Scientology and several other movements out in California. And he is obviously a cult leader. He's a polygamist. And we now know from this court case, he's also a pedophile. So he pretty much did what he wanted and had protection. At one point in that court case over the pedophilia, he had four attorneys representing him. And here's another curious factoid. 2 months after he's accused of this pedophilia and that marriage is annulled, he announced his death is announced in the Oakland and San Francisco papers. And then we discover that he had been on a trip back to Dayton, Ohio, where he was born. And that's when he had his heart attack and disappeared. So the next year, magically, Douglas, we see him preaching sermons in the Church of Psychoscience in Dayton, Ohio.
Well, psychoscience must be able to raise you from the dead.
It obviously did, because he then carried on for many years preaching sermons under a different name. His name before his first death was H. Robert Sinclair, which was Sinclair was his mother's maiden name. And then after his first death, he starts going by H.R. Moore or H. Robert Moore. That's how he was until his second death in 1944, about 4 months after Larry Ellison was born. So now we're starting to, you can imagine my thing, how would we sync all these things up? And then I was able to get a hold of you once, and you were saying, well, that's how these cults work. This guy's a sex maniac. He marries multiple wives, never divorces any of them, got caught, faked his death, comes back again, and just keeps preaching these sermons where he is attracting people with hypnotism, with clairvoyance, with doubling people's money, with talking to the dead. And that somehow seems to be a part of the steeping of the culture in San Francisco and Oakland. And there is even one point where a New York newspaper is complaining that the Hearst newspapers are giving this guy free rein, even though he's a convicted pedophile. And so we see this. At the time, people were very suspicious of this guy, but he was allowed to carry on. And so if he is, in fact, Larry Ellison's father, that explains a lot. And even if he isn't, it still explains a lot, because Larry was raised in this Church of Psychoscience. Actually, it was the first Church of Psychoscience in Oakland.
Isn't that precious? That's what's happened to anyone who comes to America, because America is filled with will forces. And when you get here and you're pseudo-spiritual, then it's very clear. You choose the path of morality and virtue, or you choose the path of perdition and the seven deadly sins. So let me just recap this for people. I'll put it in a really simple Thomas Paine in the ass of the globalist view. Larry Ellison was a bastard of Reverend Moore, the founder of the first Church of Psychoscience. And he was a follower of W.T. Stead, who is the founder, or really the, what would you call it, the person who wrote about the what?
The strategist.
The strategist, yes, that's what he was. He was the strategist of the Pilgrim Society that took Tavistock manipulation of morality. And of course, when you say Tavistock, they want to wipe out morals. They want to get rid of family life. They want to get rid of healthy sexual relations. They want to get rid of anything except obeying what you're told. And then what do you get as your reward? The path of perdition. You get sex, money, power, and those are all demons. I can name the demons because the first five books of the Bible, there was one that was left out called the Book of Solomon. And in that, these demons, these devils, some of whom are fallen angels, some are elemental beings, some are created by human action and steal human warmth so that they can even have an existence. They are waiting there to provide those people with every single desire that they think they can satiate. Problem is, you cannot satiate any desire. None. There's no such thing. You can always desire more. And it's funny that Reverend Moore, that's what I'd like to call him, wanted more, more, more. So what was he? He was a con artist. But then what were the Pilgrim Society? They were rich, as we know, very rich. The two Rothschilds and Cecil Rhodes, one of the richest men in Britain at the time who basically invented concentration camps, invented...
Cecil Rhodes was Privy Council.
And Privy Council.
1894.
Yes, absolutely. He was absolutely in the Imperialistic Society, but he also, on his own, developed the Pilgrim Society so that he could have even more power and control. And he had to use someone like W.T. Stead because he was a con artist. And he was also a writer. So he was kind of like the, and he provided people with what they wanted. And in those days, everything was done in the parlor. So there are parlor tricks. There are parlor seances. There are Ouija boards all over the place. I used to go to Britain just because I was studying these things in a very deep way. I probably shouldn't get into in this podcast, but I was studying these things, and the center of it was Britain. The Society for Psychical Research was one of the first ones to look at paranormal activity. So what you would call supernatural activity. Well, what happened was,
By the way, that's described in exquisite detail in many of his writings, because he not only wrote, but he also compiled the writings of many others in this field. So there are volumes to read here. So this isn't like we're making this up or extrapolating here. This is 100% what we saw, but the writings about seances and this spirit writing and things like this just got so weird that it was very tiresome to read.
Yeah, that's not anything you're interested in. And the only person who could be interested in that is someone who is a spiritual warrior who is going out to extinguish those effects, call them into the light so that they will dissolve. So if you call somebody's sexual perversion into the light, like poor Hunter Biden, poor Biden, he just got called into the light, or that guy who just got caught on Zoom being the mainstream media pervert that he is. This is what's necessary. You have to call into the light, or the person can never get healthy. And if they have lots of power and control, the Pilgrim Society were the kings of fraud. They were three of the richest people in Britain at the time, and I think one of them was the richest person in the world at that time. They were sexual perverts. We already know that. That's the history. W.T. Stead, their secretary,
he describes himself as a sex maniac.
Yeah, and that's okay, because it's all right for the leader of the cult to do that, because somehow they have some special connection through their spirit. Wanderings because of the validation of that which is beyond the threshold. Now, that's the threshold of death. What causes people to be fascinated and hypnotized by these kind of BS nonsense? Because they're scared of death. They want proof that there's life after death. There's plenty of proof of that if one would simply use a clear thinking mind. But when you start to see automatic writing or a Ouija board supposedly move on its own, or a table knocking, or knockings on the doors during a seance, or hear the voice, a strange voice coming through the medium through in the seance, that somehow convinces some people that there's life after death, and it makes them feel comfortable. Why? Because they're materialists. They're trying to hang on to this world, and they don't have any sense of spirituality, so they actually go towards the dark light. Lucifer has a light, but it is contained, self-effulgent. It does not shine on anybody. It does not illuminate anything except Lucifer's own pride. Well, that's what these people are. And so what you're talking about is a new form of corporatist religion. But the religion is worship of money, which is the demon Mammon. It's worship of war, which is the demon Maleficat. It's the demon of gambling, the demon of sex, all the demons of the seven deadly sins. They are very real folks, and they don't just come just individually for the person who casts a spell and asks them to come and possess them. They possess everyone who have those same evil desires, because there's nothing original about sexual perversion, pedophilia, power and control over people, the desire for money, insatiable, gluttonous lust for money. There's nothing special about that. Animals feel that, okay? So you become an animal. So they had to decide, are they in their parlor tricks going to go for the people who can give them the big shock, the big unbelievable connection with the unseen, or are they going to go the long, hard path of gradual spiritual development? They don't want that at all. Now, what did these people plan to do from the beginning? They plan to give you your own dark realm. So we have right now, provided by Larry Ellison, who controls every speck of data in the British form, in the world. They had to have that. They had to have everything on the internet go through the military. They had to have everything on Facebook become a weaponized social control mechanism. It was an experiment that went bad. But that's what these people are all about. They create a war as an experiment. They create a new illness and a virus, COVID-19, and they spread it to see what will happen. How many people can they kill? How many times can they call forth the demon Maleficat to try to annihilate and people on the earth and depopulate the earth because of their own selfish interests? These people, they aren't going to hell. They live in hell. Imagine if you're Larry Ellison and you're trying to hide the fact that your daddy, who impregnated one of his followers, probably underage, and then Larry was donated to the church of total perversion, the church of complete perdition, the church of the path to hell. And then what does he do? He comes and absorbs a system that is nothing more than a system, a dark system, a dark file system to try to find those who are criminals and control them. Why? Because you're probably going to use them for your own purposes. That's the kind of people we're dealing with here. So when we look at this, this goes back to what you had said from the beginning in these kind of discussions. The intent here is to create a dark profile for every human being so that you can be blackmailed, so that you can be manipulated. And I call it the black box or the digital prison. It's already happened, folks. Facebook has already created that. And the next, as soon as Facebook goes down, because they hope that it'll be taken down for monopoly and antitrust, so they can become what? 7 times bigger like Standard Oil did? Yeah, that's what they want. But anyway, when they change, Eric Schmidt has already described what he's going to offer to you. He's going to offer you a Facebook that gives you everything you want because it knows you better than yourself before you even desire it. When you go towards your keyboard, the words will appear of what your next evil desire is. Why? Because it's as predictable as animal behavior.
Yes. You know, he talked about that with Charlie Rose, and Charlie asked him, okay, in the future, when you use Google and you ask it a question, how many responses are you going to get back? Because right now I get millions. And Eric Schmidt very carefully said, you're going to get one response, and it's going to be the right answer. And I mean, that sounded so bizarre. But what, for anybody that studied programming, we kind of learned this early on that it always drove me nuts when a program with maybe 200 or 300 lines of code would have one comma out of place and it would not work until you got that comma right. As soon as you got that comma right, the program would work. Well, look how computers have kind of manipulated us into a situation where we're accepting the idea that there's one right answer. That is fascinating and something we all grew up with. But let's talk about lies for a second, because what we have seen in Larry's baby daddy, this Reverend Moore, we've seen a man who did nothing but lie his whole career. And he was prosecuted for it. His life was well recorded in the newspapers of the time. I mean, we're talking going back to 1907, 1908. And he was labeled a fraud. But one of the things that we're now seeing from this label of fraud that a lot of these psychics and clairvoyants and seers and mediums get is they see that as part of their persecution. And they see that they have to use fraud to get people in the mood to actually meet the real demons. And I never thought of it that way, that even if, in fact, Stead once said only about 10% of the seances that he does or participates in actually ever meet spiritual beings. He said the rest are just fake. And they accept that they have to do the fakeness in order to get the real demons released. And so we see that Hugh Moore was a total fake. He faked his death. He came back. He lied about everything about his life. And what we see is Larry inherited a situation where it's probably the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Because what does he do? He emerges as this anointed one that was assigned by the CIA to take over Oracle. And they made up a whole story about how he made up the term Oracle. Well, we've now just discovered that no, he didn't, that was a LA County courts and police project in 1969. So from the beginning, Larry Ellison has been a total fraud, and we all bought it. Now look at that. Something that simple as the origin of Oracle and where it came from. I never questioned that story my whole life. And I don't know if you did or not, but the idea that we believe that lie and therefore we believe that character and persona, which was a fake persona of this guy named Larry Ellison, that is controlling such a massive amount of our lives, is all based on a fraud, is it tells you why we're in this situation. This culture that we have is a house built on shifting sand, a shifting sand of lies. We've got to change that.
And it was a program consciously developed, written out, and your research and the research of the miners have brought out literally their plan for the world, global domination, and they are fulfilling it completely. Now, I just want to mention these frauds. When I say that the cyber lords from Silicon Valley, these young punks who supposedly on a weekend with a keg of beer write Facebook program, you know, yeah, I believe that, Mark of the Zuckerbeast. No, wrong. What I believe is the following. Mark of the Zuckerbeast, along with Sergey Brin, Lady Gaga, six of the 32 American recipients of the 2006 Rhodes Scholarship, Cecil Rhodes Scholarships. Okay, if you're deemed a genius in this country, guess what happens? You get to go to John Hopkins Center for Talented Youth. And don't be concerned that Sergey Brin went there. Don't be concerned that Mark Zuckerberg went there, or Terrence Dow, or Alyssa Hallam, or Jacob Lurie, or these are the biggest names that there are out there in their field. Ronan Farrow, Andrew Yang. There's lists of the people who have been brainwashed with Tavistock brainwashing to be frauds. Now, when you look at them, they're all going to talk and act the same way because they were trained in the same methodology that Hitler was trained when he was trained by a certain magician, actually, on what, how to look, where to look, what your gestures should be so that you can convince people. So look at these idiots. When they're asked a question, what does Mark Zuckerberg do every single time? His head tilts back and his mouth opens and his brain goes blank. And then he says whatever he was just told a few minutes before to say. Andrew Yang, these people didn't invent anything. Sergey Brin, oh, it's just a coincidence. It's just a coincidence that Larry Page and Sergey Brin became filthy rich over Google, which wasn't Google. It was Mimex. It was a DARPA project. These are the front people. Lady Gaga. This is a person who is tearing down the morality of America. I don't even want to go into how sick this person is.
By the way,
the list go on and on.
When you talk about these front people, it's now becoming clear why they believed they need these front people. And it has to do with patents and technology, because what they had in the early days of communications and wireless was a problem that there were patents by a lot of different people. It was very diverse and there were different kinds of technology developing. Well, if you want to control 100% of an industry, then you've got to grab control of it somehow. And so what these guys have done with these cardboard cutouts is they first prop them up in front of the organization, make sure they're well controlled and will do what they're told. And then they assign patents to them over, and they become the holder of all of the technology for that space that they're trying to control. Now, does that give that person a lot of power? Well, in one sense, yes, But since these people are not in control of their own egos, of their own lives, they don't really have control of anything. It's their handlers who have all the control. They're just putting their name up in front of that particular technology. And let me give an example, Since Facebook stole our patents, which were trade secrets before they were even filed, there are about 700 or 800 patents that mainly Fenwick and West, one of my other former lawyers, has filed for Facebook. And on all of those patents, Zuckerberg's name is on it. Well, why do they do that? Well, they do that because then no one can claim that Facebook doesn't own a particular type of technology and will force the person who really invented it to sue Facebook, who's got an unlimited amount of cash, can hire tens of millions of dollars worth of crooked attorneys who are quite happy to let it run through the courts until they can bribe the judge and get it off. That's the way this game works. And so that's why they have these cardboard cutouts. Who's that guy we talked about, Juan, the guy who is supposedly, what was his company, TikTok? And that he's now got his name on all these technologies and patents supposedly related to TikTok, has nothing to distinguish himself other than the fact that he is the cardboard cutout. And that's what's going on here. They'll seize that claim against the family anytime they want. That's why they put it all on foundations. They probably have the Pilgrim Society controllers in the back end in their foundations anyway. So they'll acquire the rights to all that stuff when these people fade.
Now, how do you know they're a pilgrim? Easy. Take Daddy Bill Gates, and then there's Baby Bill Gates, who's an idiot. I don't think he can write code. And when you hear him speak, he is obviously now gone insane because his daddy died, and he was constructed. He was a constructed evil tool. And you're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you, but once you think about it, you realize that it's true. What Bill Gates was about that demonstrated he was a pilgrim? Depopulation. He supported, from the beginning, abortion and killing babies rampantly, especially if they were of indigent population, as they called them. In other words, blacks, Hispanic, or anybody that isn't a white supremacist. So what did Bill Gates do? He made his son with his mother. His mother participated in this. They made Bill Gates into a constructed evil demon. And now Bill Gates believes that nonsense. And just like Peter Thiel, just like Elon Musk, just like a Facebook idiot, Mark of the Zucker Beast, these people are told the following. And when you hear this, you're going to say, oh my goodness, this is in Star Wars. This is in all the science fiction movies. I know because I helped write the third treatment for Star Wars. So the deal is they tell them the following. You are going to live forever because we're going to create machines that do that for you. And then we're going to take your brilliance, which there was no brilliance because they didn't invent anything, and we're going to implant it into the machine. Don't tell anybody, because that's what we're selling everybody. We've already sold everybody who's in the digital belief, and this is a belief system. When you believe in machines, you are part of a religion of subnature, a religion of dark. All this happens in the dark. Your computer does it all in the dark, right? It's happening in the dark. So these people are told, you're going to enter into the machine, into the internet, because they try to tell you the internet doesn't exist anywhere. It exists in the clouds. It exists everywhere. Wrong. Unconsciousness is going to live forever in this machine. Now, they've told all of these idiots that, and every one of them, including Brin and Page and all the ones I've mentioned, they all believe they're the one. And who is it that they're going to become? The very thing that they've sold digital believers on, which is that the artificial intelligence God is going to do all of our thinking for us and tell us what to do and control our lives. And the question then would become, the artificial intelligence God, first off, it's artificial intelligence. It's not true intelligence. It's not human. It is sub-nature. It is, in these cases, these are demons of the elemental world who are then using fallen hierarchical beings to enter into people to make them go to the machine and give themselves, their entire being, over to the machine. Well, that's what is being told to the cyberlords, the cardboard cutout Silicon Valley idiots. They're being told that what is already happening to every Facebook user that is really addicted to it, or anybody addicted to their machines, they have been pulled into the machine, and the dark profile that's already been created by basically our social credit system, a version of American Dragonfly that Eric Schmidt has already created. He already has it out there. He's ready to go to the new stage of that where you only get one answer, and it's the answer that is always right, because why? The artificial intelligence god of the machine says so. These people are told that they will become that artificial intelligence god of the machine that lives forever. Now, that is insane. And anyone who knows a single thing about a computer or programming knows that if there is an artificial intelligence god in a machine, a human programmed it. And who programmed it with the intent to pull people into the machine to basically consume their higher consciousness? That would be people like the Pilgrim Society. That would be people like Reverend Moore. That would be people who are unconsciously, like Larry Ellison and Zuckerberg and all the rest, are doing what they think is their own egotistic expression for immortality in a machine. And Eric Schmidt, one of the worst people. All these people who have this money from the digital virtual world and the manipulation of what are weapons to be used against humanity, all humanity, not just Americans, to be used against all humanity, this is a conscious evil act. This is on some people's part. Eric Schmidt is absolutely conscious of what he's doing, okay? So what does he want? He wants to live forever. That's why he spent billions of dollars on stem cell research, on the rejuvenation through blood therapy, all these things. He wants to be the man in the machine that then controls all of humanity for the rest of time. Now, that sounds like a Star Wars story. It sounds like something from Star Trek. It is not. It's already happened. It's already here. Think about what I just said, and you will see that these people stand up and actually say this out loud. They say these things out loud. There will never be a human living in the machine. Any machine is programmed. Artificial intelligence is not human intelligence, therefore it cannot evolve. It will only devolve. And in every science fiction dystopia, why is it a dystopia? Because they let artificial intelligence take over. They let the robots take over. They let the machines take over. And humans bought the fraud, the king of frauds, which is really the Pilgrim Society, which is about global imperialism to control everyone but the elite. Now, do you think the elite sell their souls out to the machines? No, they don't, and they don't let their children touch them. But because they have power and control, they oftentimes then get absorbed into the other deadly sins: sex, gambling, money, power, control, and these sick things that you see these people doing. So when we're describing the First Church of Psychoscience, that is basically describing the monarchy of Britain and the entire aristocracy. When we're describing the path of perdition, the seven deadly sins, we're describing the senior executive service in America and Washington, D.C. And we see it now explicated everywhere in the news. And so these are not, unfortunately, even slightly exaggerated themes. These are realities that we're seeing everywhere.
So we have the spirit of W.T. Stead directing traffic. That's what we're seeing.
Absolutely.
I mean, it sounds crazy. When I asked you the other day, I said, I mean, is it possible that, if you read all the Stead material after he started that Julia's Bureau in 1909 and he died in 1912, he continued to appear to people in seances for years later. And his daughter actually wrote books about these appearances. So in that world, Douglas, it's not a world I'm familiar with, not directly anyway. His spiritual child was this Reverend Moore, who on the surface appears to be a total psychic fraud, but he obviously attracted people, he attracted women, and he continued to exercise great influence over people. And is it possible that that spirit that occupied W.T. Stead continued to occupy Moore and now occupies Larry Ellison? I don't know even what I'm asking there, but there's a continuity here that is unmistakable.
The demons don't die. So they go in this corporate lineage, as we have called it, or in this case, the pilgrim lineage, which is every Rhodes Scholar. Every Rhodes Scholar that doesn't know they're being brainwashed, like, you know, Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar. No, they know that they're being brainwashed if they have any intelligence. So from the beginning, they have to do a deal with the devil. And the deal with the devil is made upon the false principles of materialism. So it's not going to get them anywhere. But yes, well, W.T. Stead and Cecil Rhodes and the two Rothschilds who supported the founding of
Dorms and Rosemary.
And the founding of Cecil Rhodes Roundtable. Those people continue to this very day through the Rhodes Scholarships, and you must comply. And if you're going to the John Hopkins School for Talented Youth, you must comply, or else you will not go on. So if you do not have the ability to wipe your soul of any morality whatsoever, you cannot be one of these people. When a Mark Zuckerberg is told that what he's doing is imprisoning people, he has no response to that. When you talk about the Highlands Forum and you say you're part of the, you work with the Naval Office of Net Assessment and you sit around and you determine, will this new patent that we're stealing from an inventor, which will become weaponized, how many people will it kill? That's what they're assessing. How many people will die by that weapon? And then they sit around, they calculate it. They have no compunction of morality. They have no inclination for any virtue whatsoever. You must be a Hunter Biden. You must be a Joe Biden. You must be a Larry Ellison. You must be a Cecil Rhodes, who killed all those people in South Africa and then has a country named after him and becomes so wealthy that he controlled gold and diamonds through his subsequent companies and through Rothschild investments to this very day. These people, through their lineage, through the people that they pass this on to, certainly do pass on the demonic possession that has driven them to this type of global insanity. And I say insanity, they don't think it's insanity, but anybody with any morality would say, none of that is going to work. But look, out here in the world, it says we are born into our father, the devil, and that this is the world of Lucifer. He was thrown from heaven down to this realm and pulled with his tail a third of the stars in the sky. We're down here. We're in the battle. We are the fight. The fight is in you, and it is for your own higher spiritual nature, your what we would call your I am consciousness. It is a fight for that. And it is a fight every single day for every single person on the earth that turns towards anything that these pilgrims have controlled, which is technology, patents, weaponry, wars, mainstream media, intelligence, development and gathering, and then the lies and propaganda. And they are the best propagandists of all, because why? Pilgrim Society members, just like Bill Gates, are kings of fraud who are working with evil forces.